Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day with a goal of informing and motivating listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 5 regional stations, as well as 4 additional stations in Virginia. There's now a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities. We sincerely need your help to accomplish this mission. Your support of any amount is needed to take this next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support us in this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale.
Go to fcbcatjax.com and click the donate button, or send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention radio. Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike Hill. I'm sitting in for Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Dr. Youngblood and his family are still dealing with the situation with his son being in a hospital with COVID-19. And we ask for your prayers for Dr. Youngblood and for his son. He's going through a difficult time right now, and please pray. We have seen over this period of time, it's been going on 3 weeks now or perhaps longer, that Dr. Youngblood's son, we've seen some positive results from your prayers. We see some miraculous results of your prayers. And just as things start to improve, all of a sudden we take a couple of steps back. So I would ask that you please continue to pray for Dr. Youngblood. Again, this is Mike Hill. I'm sitting in for Dr. Youngblood. I'm out of the Pensacola area and former state representative for District 1, Florida State House for District 1 and District 2. Okay, just before our break, we were talking about how the Democrats want to increase taxes to what they call their fair share. I was reading an article by Theodore Gephardt where he states that not only do the rich already pay their fair share, they pay more than their fair share, and that their taxes should be reduced. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, I have read articles many times where the majority of our taxes, 90% of our taxes, are paid by those in the top 5% of our income tax bracket, that at least half of our population do not pay any taxes at all. And I think we need to fix that. That's not right. Everyone should have a little skin in the game. Everyone should pay some amount of taxes, because when they do that, you now have a voice. You now want to make sure who gets elected in office will not raise your taxes. And so you will participate, more readily participate in our whole election process. So I think that everyone should be paying some form of taxes to support this great nation, but only enough for Congress, for government, to perform its limited enumerated powers, and no more than that. In fact, I would like to see us get rid of the federal income tax altogether, and we could do that if government simply went back to within its powers stated in the Constitution what its true authority should be. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to join in with your comments and thoughts, I would invite you to. The number to call in is 904-831-0917. Again, 904-831-0917. Okay, let's switch gears just a little bit, and let's go to an article that I found. It comes from the Foundation for Economic Education. and it talks about a $26 hourly minimum wage, which is crazy. It wasn't that long ago they were talking about $15 minimum wage, and you had they were promoting, the leftists were promoting for workers to go on strike in front of Walmart, in front of McDonald's, and demand these $15 an hour minimum wage. What happened when they did that? Do you guys recall? We start seeing machinery replacing people. You see, not only at Walmart, but at a lot of other of these stores, self-checkout centers. That means less people, more machinery. And so these people demanding a $15 minimum wage now have $0 because they lost their jobs. They should have been content with what the market was going to pay them for their wages. Okay, let me read this article. A $26 hourly minimum wage may sound pretty crazy, but that's roughly what the minimum wage would be today if it had kept pace with productive growth since its value peaked in 1968, progressive economist Dean Baker wrote. And having the minimum wage track productivity growth is not a crazy idea. Yes, it is. The national minimum wage did, in fact, keep pace with productivity growth for the first 30 years after a national minimum wage first came into existence in 1938. The national minimum wage in 1938 was like $1.15, ladies and gentlemen. And 30 years after that, it wasn't even $3 an hour. In the 1960s, it wasn't $3 an hour minimum wage. So the idea that it kept pace with productivity is nonsense. The left always wants someone else to pay for their nonsensical schemes. They come up with these crazy ideas. $26 an hour, first $15 an hour minimum. First of all, the minimum wage itself is nonsense. Government should not dictate to businesses what they should pay their employees. That is a contract between the employer and the employee, and government has no right to get involved with that. What that employer wants to pay that employee is a wage that they both agree on. And if they don't agree on it, then that employee doesn't have to work there. They can go somewhere else. And if that employer wants to keep good employees, he will raise their wages. In other words, you let the market determine what the wage is, what the minimum wage is, not what government arbitrarily dictates that it should be. Okay, now, back to this progressive economist, Dean Baker, in the article. Think of what the country would look like if the lowest paying jobs, think of dishwashers or custodians, were paid $26 an hour, Baker continued. That would mean someone who worked 2,000 hour a year would have an annual income of $52,000. This income would put a single mother with two kids at well over twice the poverty level. This is what this nitwit doesn't seem to understand, that if everyone, not everyone, but if the minimum wage and people working went up to $52,000, first of all, that would cause inflation to kick in. If everyone was making that kind of money, then businesses could charge more for their products because people could afford it. And here, a single mother with two kids wouldn't have to go and work. In fact, they would have more of an incentive to stay at home with their family, keeping the family intact, a man and a woman. A man who's earning $52,000 a year, the woman can stay home and take care of the kids. They would have more of an incentive to stay together and raise a family instead of government taking care of you. Now, back to the article. This favorable analysis of the prospect of a $26 minimum wage was reported in many left-leaning media outlets, such as CBS News, and the Independent. Perhaps relatedly, former Labor Secretary turned progressive commentator Robert Reich recently tweeted out that today seems like a good time to remind you that if wages had kept pace with productivity gains over the last 50 years, the minimum wage would be $24 an hour. $15 is a floor, not the ceiling of what working people deserve. He's a communist. What do you know what working people deserve? They deserve what they earn. They deserve what they take home after an honest day's work, not what you say that they deserved. Understand this. Increased wages does not necessarily mean increased productivity. Just because you increase someone's wages doesn't mean that all of a sudden productivity increases. That is not what does it. Productivity is increased by labor being used more effectively, by tools being used more effectively, resources being used more effectively. That is what increases productivity. Technology being used more effectively. Just arbitrarily raising wages does not increase productivity. Okay, now, back to the article. To be clear, support for a $26 minimum wage is still not the majority position on the left. Yet, the movement is gaining enough traction for the prospect to be worthy of evaluation, and it's a frightening one. Let's assume, for the sake of argument, that Baker is right about productivity and wages, and ignore the fact that this disparity may itself be caused by government rather than private businesses. This still doesn't imply we should raise the minimum wage. Why? Well, here goes the article. It continues. Well, while it might sound idyllic for everyone to make $26 an hour, idealism cannot change economic reality. And as economist Thomas Sowell famously explained, the real minimum wage is always zero, regardless of the laws, and that is the wage that many workers receive in the wake of the creation or escalation of government-mandated minimum wage, because they either lose their jobs or fail to find jobs when they enter the labor force. The article goes on to say, why is the real minimum wage zero? Because there's always the option not to employ the worker at all. Get that, former Walmart workers. Get that, former McDonald's workers. Back to the article. And if the minimum wage is arbitrarily set at a level above the value of the worker's labor, employing them would be charity, not business. As it may be to think that dishwashers would receive $26 an hour, in many cases, businesses would invest in technology to do the job, hire illegal immigrants, or otherwise contrive to hire far fewer dishwashers. Okay, stepping aside for a minute, ladies and gentlemen, we saw this in action in Seattle, Washington, when they mandated the $15 an hour minimum wage in that city. What did we see happen? Many businesses had to close. Restaurants had to close because they could not afford to hire enough people for the business to operate at a point where they could make a profit. They couldn't hire enough waiters, waitresses, cooks, dishwashers, and those who clean up. They couldn't hire enough to keep the business going at $15 an hour minimum wage. So they had to close their business. So now those who were working now have zero wage. They're earning nothing. Thanks a lot, government. I do not understand why on earth those on the left cannot seem to understand basic economics. They try to come up with these ideals that they think are going to work. Oh, let's just pay everybody more. You can't do that. It's outside of economic reality. The market must determine what pay someone is going to receive. Okay, let's get back to the article. The state can legislate a minimum wage rate, Nobel Prize winning economist Milton Friedman famously explained. It can hardly require employers to hire at that minimum all who were formerly employed at wages below the minimum. It is clearly not in the interest of employers to do so. The effect of the minimum wage is therefore to make unemployment higher than it otherwise would be. That's exactly what I was saying. Okay, someone who was already making, let's say, $10 an hour, now all of a sudden the government forces you to pay $15 an hour. The government is going to have to the business is going to have to lay off some people. If they are still going to stay in business, they are still going to make a profit, and that's the only way you can stay in business is if you make a profit. You can't stay in business if you're losing money. You have to make a profit. And profit is a measurement of what prices are. And price of labor is a part of that equation. So when government comes in and just arbitrarily increases what the minimum wage should be beyond what it previously was, then the employer is going to be forced to make some decisions, either lay some people off or close his business. Back to the article. Many studies have confirmed that a $15 minimum wage would kill millions of jobs in the U.S. And in fact, we saw that happening in certain areas, as I mentioned earlier, in Seattle, Washington. We can reasonably assume that a $24 or $26 minimum wage, the job-killing effect would be far more pronounced. In fact, the progressive economist who started this whole conversation, Dean Baker, acknowledged as much. Okay, so now they're quoting Dean Baker in this article. The $26 an hour is useful as a thought experiment for envisioning what the world might look like today, but it would not be realistic as policy for local, state, or even national minimum wage without many other changes to the economy. This is what the progressive Dean Baker wrote, who actually started this whole conversation. A minimum wage this high would almost certainly lead to large-scale unemployment, and that would be true even if it were phased in over 5 or 6 years. Duh, he gets it. He gets it. But then he goes on. However, Baker doesn't view this as an insurmountable hurdle. He argues that we would have to make many other changes in the economy to make a $26 an hour minimum wage possible, citing massive regulations and increased taxes. Get that, ladies and gentlemen? They always want you to pay for their crazy ideas through increased regulations and increased taxes. That is always the less idea of how to fix things is to more control and more taxes. But what is insane is that when you do that, the unintended consequences is always putting the brakes on our economy. It is always hurting the economy. It is always hurting employers and employees. Again, I do not understand why the left cannot understand basic economics. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to join the discussion, you can call in at 904-831-0917. That's 904-831-0917. Okay, let me get to this article. Let me try one more time here. I got to put in my password. There we go. Okay, Here's another article that talks about unintended consequences of government intervention. In this case, we're going to be talking about the housing market. Okay, again, this is an article that comes from the Foundation for Economic Education. Again, that's an excellent organization. Before, I was reading to you out of the American Institute of Economic Research. Now, I'm going to go to Foundation for Economic Education. But before we get that, we have a caller on the line, Matthew. Matthew, what is your comment or statement? What would you like to say,
the left
please?
The left wants to crush the economy where we have to depend on the government. When we were in there having economics, they were in there reading books by, what's that guy's name that constructed the Communism Party? I can't think of his name right now.
Karl Marx.
I'll tell you that. So that's the problem right there. I mean, they want us to be crushed. They don't want us to get any better. We can stay down real low, and they can take care of us, and everything will be just perfect in their eyes. That's why they'll raise taxes, and they'll continue to do whatever they can do as long as they're in office. And God forbid they don't get out of office in the next 4 years. I don't know what we're going to do.
Matthew, thank you for that comment. I appreciate that. Matthew, what you were stating is exactly right. What they want to get to eventually is socialism, which morphs always into communism. That is what their ultimate goal is. And so, as you were saying, Karl Marx, who began communism, is what they want to eventually get us to. But here's the thing. Everywhere that communism has been tried and implemented, it doesn't work. So what makes them think it's going to work here? It can't. It cannot work because it goes against basic human nature of people wanting to be free and wanting to make
their
own decisions.
Free enterprise, brother. Free enterprise.
Okay, thank you for that call, Matthew. Let's get back now. As I was reading the Foundation for Economic Education, here's an article that exposes unintended consequences of government intervention in the housing market. Okay, I'm reading the article now. Those who promote government intervention in the economy often have good intentions. But as economist Thomas Sowell, everybody likes to quote Thomas Sowell because he's such a brilliant person when it comes to economics. Thomas Sowell, equipped in his best-selling book, Basic Economics, which, by the way, I've read that book, and I would encourage you to get it. Thomas Sowell, Basic Economics. Thomas Sowell states in his book, "Nothing is easier than to have good intentions, but without an understanding of how an economy works, good intentions can lead to disastrous consequences for a whole nation." And that's the truth. So in this article written by Jack Elbaum, he states that comedian and Conan O'Brien's former sidekick, Andy Richter, recently provided a valuable lesson in unintended consequences on Twitter when he complained about a request that a landlord made of him while looking for an apartment for his college-age son. In the tweet, he wrote, "My son is looking for a studio apartment around USC, and one that he applied for a couple of days ago told us that the owner wanted 6 months' rent up front. After he," this is his son, "and I," this is Andy Richter, "both paid the application fees." No wonder people hate landlords and the management companies that facilitate them. Okay, so here he is thinking that it is because of the landlord that he is requesting 6 months' rent up front. This tweet came out just one day after Supreme Court struck down the CDC's eviction moratorium, a policy that Richter says, "Yes, I am completely in favor of it." The irony must have been lost in him that the policy he supports was most likely behind a landlord's request. Okay, so here this comedian is, he's a nitwit, who supports the CDC saying that because of coronavirus, you cannot evict someone out of their home or apartment that you own, even when they are not paying rent. Now, that's nonsense right there. And first of all, the CDC does not have the authority to issue an eviction moratorium. Neither does Biden. Neither does anyone in Congress. Now, if the state legislative body wants to pass a law saying so, let them feel free to try and do that. But it is not up to government to do it. Okay, so why are these landlords asking for at least 6 months rent? It's because they don't want the eviction moratorium to come into play again. Here is the CDC or Biden or anybody else saying you cannot kick someone out of the home who is not paying rent. So what they're doing is hedging their risk by saying, okay, I'm going to collect 6 months rent. In other words, it is government that is causing them to behave this way. When in fact, if they had instead let the market determine it, then market competition would say that you only collect 1 month's rent or whatever is needed simply to make a profit. Ladies and gentlemen, we're coming to the end of our show. We discussed a lot today. What I would like to encourage you is, despite all that you see that is going on around you, do not be afraid. Do not be dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with you wherever you go. Call out to God. Let your prayers be heard. Let your petitions be heard, and he will in no wise cast you out. He will hear each of your prayers, and God is faithful. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Mike Hill. I've been sitting in for Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Again, I request that you continue to pray for Dr. Youngblood and his son. We'll continue tomorrow with Face the Issues at the same time. God bless you.
Have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located 1/2 mile south of I-295. FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 9:45 p.m., for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study. Prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also, tune in the same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard in its entirety 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM and 93.3 HD3. You're also invited to tune in Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. on Talk 100.3 for expository preaching. Tune in and invite others to listen.